for war, never back down, give me some more. We came for the title, killing the game.
Welcome into another episode of Patrick Jones Baseball.
On this week's episode, we have Sean Stevens. Sean is the recruiting coordinator, strength coach, and pitching coach at Middle Georgia State University. He's a good friend of mine. Great background, great story. He actually didn't even start playing college baseball himself until he was 28 years old. He continued to play all the way into professional baseball, played independent professional baseball for a few years. Then he got into coaching, and man, he's a jack of all trades, and he really does a great job of doing so many different things at a very high level, very high level. So great episode, great interview. You guys are going to enjoy this. Here we go with my very good friend, Sean Stevens.
This is the future. This is my time. I grind and shine. I put in the work and push the line. I'm holding my crown. I never back down.
All right. We now welcome onto the podcast, Sean Stevens. Sean, my man, what's going on, dude?
Not much, not much. Just excited to be here, spend a little time with you, and nobody better in college baseball than you.
I don't know about that. That's a high praise. I don't know about that one, but you know, we've known each other for, geez, man, several years now, and it's always good connecting with you. And you know, I got a lot of things I want to talk about with you today, a lot of different topics. First off, though, and I usually don't do this because I usually just we get right into it, start, you know, yep, different topics, things like that. But I think you're a unique person in a sense that, like, your background is a little bit, it's very unique compared to the average college coach out there. And in the sense of, like, you're playing. So, like, can you take everybody through just a, you know, brief, just elevator pitch of your own background, like how you got started playing baseball in college and then coaching in college as well?
Yeah, super non-traditional. And I think that's why the relatability factor is so important. So, like, every kid is so unique, and it's funny, man. I was thinking about it this morning before I jumped on with you, and I was like, my church motto is hashtag one more. And when I think of how I was discovered or how I was found, I'm not gonna say I was discovered, but I was found by a college recruiter. You know, he was at a summer league game, just kind of, you know, popping in, and I happened to be out there, and you know, you make one throw. You have one quab, you know, you give them one hard 90. It's amazing how just a life can change. And I was 28 years old, you know, and I know the crowd's probably like, holy smokes, like, how does that happen? But that's the day and age that we were in. And, you know, and here I am, you know, 7 years later after a 4-year college career and a 2-year stint in indie ball. And I needed to sow those seeds, and a lot of college baseball players need to understand that now. It's like, you know, whatever you can do to build that resume, you know, for whatever baseball or for whatever life has for you post baseball, you need to make sure you get those things done. And for me, it was a mission. There was no, and this is going to sound kind of selfish, and a lot of people probably won't be able to relate, but I did a lot of things throughout my career that a lot of people wouldn't do. There was no relationship that could really hold me down. The game just meant so much to me. And then I was giving plasma to buy wooden bats. Like, I would do anything, you know, to put myself in a position to where I had more resources and you know, you just couldn't get the bat out of my hands. And that's the kind of, I guess you could say, grit, passion, fire in the belly. Like, you just, I had it, you know, and I'm just blessed to be able to, and continue to search high and low for that same player.
What changed from 18 to 28 when that fire was just lit underneath you?
One conversation from mom, something as simple as, you know, what happened? Why did everything change so quick? I mean, obviously, man, like, we come out of the womb as young men with bats in our hands. Like, we want to play the game. You know, we you know, the epitome is just, you know, chasing, pursuing greatness, and, you know, and trying to be like the big leaguers, right? And trying to step into those shoes. And that's always been a dream of mine. And at the end of the day, I mean, I just, you know, you flat out have to realize that, you know, there's a bigger picture, and or you just weren't good enough. And so, you know, Moneyball comes to mind, you know, you know, until they, you know, you play till they rip the jersey off you, or until, you know, somebody tells you that you're just not good enough. And so that, my day came, and now I'm a passionate coach, and it all transcends, it all translated, and I'm fired up about it. I love where baseball and coaching and life has taken me.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons I like you so much is you just I like people who I wouldn't say have no regard for social norms, but just kind of like you're on your own mission and you don't really care necessarily what anybody else's opinion is of that. Like you get it's your life, right? It's like it's what you're trying to do. And so what anyone else thinks is kind of irrelevant. I really like that. I respect that. I respect people who go about it and do it that way. And I'm sure your players see that too, right? Even if they don't even say it out loud, they're like, man, this guy's all in. You know what I'm saying? Like this guy, he's all about it. When you got done playing, how old were you and did you know immediately like you wanted to get into coaching?
So 34, I was scared. I really had no idea what was next. But I did know one thing. I knew the game was good to me, and I knew I had to give back. And in my 20s, you asked me what I did in the, in that time frame, and I was coaching. I was around young players. I was giving back. I was working midnight shifts at UPS. I was doing everything that I could to position myself to make a comeback, right? To go on a revenge tour if there was ever going to be an opportunity to do so. And that's why, our short time together was so memorable because you got to see the good, the bad, the ugly, the frustrated, the fire in the belly. Like I said, there was nothing more important than traveling the world, playing the game at its highest level, and failing along the ways, not understanding, how pro ball is such a different animal. How college baseball as in my eyes, taken a step laterally. I wouldn't even say forward. I wouldn't say backwards. I would just say that we're like side shuffling right now, trying to figure out what the next chapter may hold. But I'm excited to be in it. I'm in the trenches with the players. You see how much I recruit, man. I love getting out. I love talking to players and coaches and facilities and organizations.
When you say laterally, are you referring to the transfer portal and NIL?
Yeah, because I'm loyal to 24s. I'm loyal to 25s. And if anybody watches this podcast, it's we're searching, we're looking, we're trying to find winners, we're trying to find guys that want to get their hands dirty.
What's the recruiting process for you guys at Middle State, Georgia?
Yeah, no, we're on to 25s. We're for the most part done with our 24s, but what it looks like is just the most complete overall product that we can get our hands on, right? Like we want to be able to identify players early, stay on them, build relationships, and then be able to set that standard, that expectation when they set foot on campus and just know that, they're not just a number here. And I know everybody says that, uses that loosely, and everybody talks about building culture and things like that. But you can walk in, you can knock on our door. I mean, for the most part, right? Like we're in here for we spend more time, me and Coach Knight spend more time together than I do with my girlfriend or my wife. So it's just, it's kind of one of those things that it's an uncontrollable and we want to make ourselves available and accessible.
So for I think I said Middle State, Georgia before. I don't know what I was saying. Just
That's
words,
okay.
Middle Georgia State at Middle Georgia State. How many players? Like, 'cause I think a lot of times, I'll hear college coaches they'll talk about the recruiting process, and it's always the Division Ones, right? And it's like how that process works. It's like okay, we get that, but I think it's important for people to understand what the recruiting process is like for D2, D3, NAIA, and you have so much experience now that you've been coaching for, several years at various levels, which I think is awesome. And it allows you to have so much wisdom when it comes to coaching college baseball, especially at those levels. Like, what's the recruiting process like at those levels in terms of the timeline? Maybe we'll just start with the timeline. Like, when are you starting to reach out to players? Is it junior year? Is it spring of junior year? Like, when usually is it?
Yeah, we try and identify guys. We're about a year out right now. I'm a a one man show on the recruiting side for the most part. I'm out and about as much as I possibly can be. Now we do obviously make that transition into the junior college product after the new year. But there's always a 24, there's always a 25 that squeaks by. Like there's no way I can get my eyes on every single player, right? Like the Twitter portal. Is an unbelievable resource. And
I like
I
that.
will, live and die by it. And it's another it's another low-hanging fruit for a, Division II program that continues to try and find the guy, right? The diamond in the rough, the young man that we missed. So our timeline is usually a year out.
The Twitter portal. Did you come up with that yourself? I like that.
I did. Yeah, I
That's
did.
awesome. So speaking of the Twitter portal, how many players are you identifying online that actually turn into recruits?
I'd say it's probably about a so out of our camp, we signed three young men last year off of Twitter. I'd say identification wise, we're probably around the 15 to 25%. And then I'd say the other 60%, 50 to 60% is me out on the roads, shaking hands, building relationships that become ongoing. And then obviously those lead to on campus workouts and camp invites, and then those relationships kind of mend themselves.
I know you coach in the summertime too. So when's a lot of this recruiting being done, like throughout the school year?
Hard worker, man, underpaid, undervalued. It's a lot of sleepless nights, and I that work-life balance between utilizing the road as an opportunity to get out and spread my wings a little bit and kind of take a deep breath, and just know that when I leave campus, I've left traces, foot tracks, if you will, for our players of, in regards to, leadership and guidance. And my big thing with our guys is leaders lead, and just like hitters hit, leaders lead. Yeah, if you don't entrust your program, if you don't entrust that you've got other coaches in place, then you're a sinking ship. But I think we're in position, like I said, for me to be able to get out. And don't get me wrong, man, like there's days it's tough. You have to make big time decisions, versus, continue to get, put your eyes on your own 40 to 42 guys, in which now we're south of that, obviously, with us into the year with injuries and guys deciding that, it's time for them to hang them up and or move on. There's some tough decisions being made by some young men. So there's a lot of one-on-ones going on right now, and some guys in their feelings, if you will, because we're getting deeper into the spring, and guys are kind of seeing, how we're going to go to war every single week, and if their number's not getting called, they want to know what adjustments they need to make, and if they're not making them, then it's a dog eat dog world.
I appreciate the fact that you say that it's a dog eat dog world, right? Because it is the
Yeah.
truth, especially at the college level where,
Yeah.
let's face it, it's about winning, right? Like you have to win, you have to put the best product on the field. It's not CYO where everyone gets to play at three innings no matter what. So what do you think, like what separates the players who are playing versus aren't playing? Obviously it's in-game production. But is there anything else that stands out, you think? Is it just a consistency thing? Is it physical tools or just bigger, faster, stronger? Like, what do you think it is?
So a high level, and I heard him talking about it in a big league game the other day about the level of IQ at the pro game, in the pro game, and just how, like I said, we're just side shuffling right now. We're trying to figure out, okay, so we've built a player that's bigger, faster, stronger. We've built a guy that can get out in front of the game, but at the end of the day, is he able to get that dirt ball read? Is he able to make that in-game, in-box, pitch-by-pitch adjustment? Is he able to remain composed? Is he able to showcase that he's a complete player? So for me, it's IQ, and a lot of these coaches that tell you, that it's not hustle on, hustle off, hard 90s, like some of the best players in the world. I watch big league games as much as I possibly can, just to see, how many guys are given hard 90s, right? Like how many guys are hard out the box? How many guys have intent to win 180 feet? And then the translation on the summer circuit, being able to get out and see those guys at a higher level, those draft products, if you will, and those guys that, asking for feedback and just continuing to be a sponge around guys like that. And it's there. You got to dig, man. Like you got to ask players to do things that make them uncomfortable.
It's funny you mentioned the hard 90s. I don't know if you listened to the podcast that I dropped yesterday with Tyler Pachnik, who's the recruiting coordinator at Jacksonville State. But he's told a story on there, which I thought was every player needs to hear. And he was coaching a kid. He obviously didn't mention the kid's name, but he was coaching the kid in college, and a few like a pro team was really interested in him, and they came to watch him a few times. And he ran hard down to first, but it wasn't as fast as he could. And so I think it was a like a 4.4, 4.5, something like that, which is decent, but he wasn't going all out. And the scout told Tower, he's like, "Look, I know he's faster than that, but I have to turn in what he ran, right? He ran a 4.4, 4.5. I know he's faster than that, but I have to turn it in." And so like that's a perfect example of you like there is no reason in college and high school with the limited amount of games that you are not running hard 90s. None.
We have guys that cheat themselves every weekend, and I hate to say that. I'd like to believe that we don't, but it happens on every college baseball field, no matter where you play, no matter who you are, no matter what your identity is, no matter what your draft stock is. So no guy's too got, no guy's too good. It's kind of my belief system.
Talk to me a little bit about summer college baseball, because this is something that, again, dude, I feel like you have so much experience doing so many different things, but you've been coaching summer collegiate baseball now for several years. Talk to me about that. I don't think a lot of people understand how that works, because I know it's changed a little bit in the last few years, maybe with the transfer portal and certain coaches maybe not wanting players to go play. Like, can you just tell everybody how that operation works?
Yeah, so let me first say that I wouldn't be where I'm at, man, if it wasn't for some of the leaders that put me in a position and opened up doors, and I don't need to say any names. I just they're great human beings. They're leaders, in between the white lines and outside of the white lines in the dugouts, and they've set such a precedent, such an expectation for me that when it's time and first pitch is thrown, I just feel different. I still have that same fire in my belly, and I still get excited and still want to see players do really well. And the summer means so much to me, just simply because I've seen guys go from from 20th rounders to fifth rounders to first rounders, and and guys that are starting in the big leagues right now, they didn't cheat themselves on energy and effort, and it was always their level of intent and the expectation on the summer was the same when they were at their school. And the loyalty and the passion was a lot of fun to watch. And so it's the players, it's the coaches that I've been able to surround myself by. And there's a lot of maturity that comes in with that statement, because I was a hard-headed young coach and thought I had it all figured out. And I think that's a part of the development process too. So summer ball is another opportunity. I was listening to a coach that I follow a good bit, but Craig Noto made a statement about, coaching in the Northwoods and how that helped build his belief system and gave him an opportunity to get out on the summer for an extra, in the Northwoods it's 70 plus games. I haven't been, in a league like that, so I can't relate, but I just know that, the experience that you gain from that is priceless. And the same thing now, right? Like this summer, I think that, this is my fifth summer collegiate league. I'm going to be surrounded by a wealth of talent and minds and just great people in the New England Collegiate Baseball League. And like I said, I wouldn't be here if it weren't for my experience with some of the great coaches that I've been around. So I'd be doing myself a disservice if I didn't give them some love or a shout out for sure.
Name of the team that you're the head coach of, Martha's Vineyard Sharks. Is that right?
Vineyard. Yeah, Martha's
Vineyard,
Vineyard
Vineyard.
Sharks. Yep.
Love it.
Yeah, so it's an exciting time up there. Yeah, no doubt about it. And there's they won the league in 22. There's a lot of expectations, and I'm honored. Russ took a chance on me, and obviously my past experience. He felt like I was the right guy, and I don't need any more excitement, man. Like I'm fired up regardless. My energy level is still through the roof, and I still look to be around guys that have aspirations to be drafted. And with the draft being 20 rounds, I just don't know. I don't know how a player can afford to bypass that, a fringe draft guy.
Oh,
Right
you
now, it
can't.
is such a great time, and so I talk to a good amount of recruits, and we do discuss the summer circuit, and Middle Georgia does a great job of placing players as well. I just want you to know that's a big, I'm a big advocate of positioning our guys to go out and develop and refine and polish and just continue to work on their game, because I love having those discussions of, hey, I want to play at the highest level. Well, if you do, then you know your small sample size isn't getting the job done. You know, sitting on the bench isn't getting the job done. You need to go somewhere where you can provide a large sample size, showcase 300 to 450 ABs, and be able to get out on the summer and compete against the best talent in the world. And that begins to translate and move the sticks for you. And now all of a sudden, maybe you are a 20th rounder. Now maybe all of a sudden you are an 18th rounder. You know, and we can discuss the future. You know, so you know, those are the discussions that I want to have with our guys, but there's got to be a line in the sand. There's got to be some, you know, a realistic conversation about where they're at, where they profile, and what the next step in their career is and what it needs to be.
How do you go about choosing players for your summer team?
So it's a nice blend between. So last summer I had to build a roster with a GM. This summer, I'm fortunate enough to be a part of building a small percentage of that roster, and our GM basically piecing putting it together in a way that a championship roster in a way that he feels fit. And now, don't get me wrong, there's definitely some dialogue there. There's definitely some opinions. There's definitely, you know, hey, let's go in this direction instead of that direction. And there's a lot of there's a lot of collaboration going on, but at the end of the day, you know, a large percentage of the roster was built by Russ, and I'm completely on board with it as we continue to vet these players and follow these players. And that's the most exciting part too, is now I get to focus on player development. Now I get to focus on, you know, in the New England League, it's more about player development in the draft, and you know how we can move guys and get guys, you know, into the Cape, and or utilize our league as, you know, as a vessel, you know, into the draft.
That's awesome. I was talking to somebody the other day, and we were talking about different college summer leagues. And this guy, he coaches college baseball right now. In his opinion, the New England League was actually number two behind the Cape, is what he thought as the second best college summer league. So you're in a really good league. Again, hopefully it doesn't offend anybody else. I don't know. I mean, personally, I'm just telling you what he told me. What's the biggest difference from the Cape? Because you've been in the Cape before. So what's the difference between the Cape and like the Coastal Plains and some of the other places you've been?
I would definitely have to say, the durability of the player. And once again, like I was fortunate enough in 21 to see and be a part of what I, you know, still believe is the best roster ever put together in the Cape.
Ever?
Just simply, well, just simply, I mean, the record states that, you know, and the way we kind of ran through the divisional and or the conference in the divisional, and then the championship series, and there were no hiccups. Guys really stayed together, and I mean it was one of the most unique groups, selfless groups that I've ever been in a dugout with. And like I said, I was, you know, at that point in my college coach career, I was kind of young, so being able to take all that in and digest it, you know, took 2 years. And so the difference in the two leagues potentially, and once again, I'm not in New England yet, so I haven't seen our players throw a bullpen yet or hit live on the field. Don't get me wrong, we've got absolutely have a special group that I know we put together in Martha's Vineyard, and I look forward to seeing those guys compete every day. And I've heard stories of how special our groups typically are in the New England League, but the Cape is and will always be in my mind, and from what I've seen, just different. It'll be nostalgic. It'll never be anything that I can truly compare it to. Other than, you know, potentially, you know, this special summer that I have ahead. You know, I this group could be different. This group could change my opinion, and I don't think my opinion means much. You know, at the end of the day, I just, well, once again, you know, you win a championship in the Cape with, you know, a group of players that are committed and selfless, and they go after it, and you have, you know, 30 plus draft picks, and I don't know how you argue with that, you know. And then you have two three-hole hitters from Power Five organizations, not even or programs, not even get drafted. And you know, there's, you know, one of them's having the year of his life in the Marlins organization, and in my eyes was one of the best left-handed hitters I've ever seen. You know, and the other was a three-hole in an SEC Power Five, and didn't even get drafted. So the nature of the game, the caliber of player, it's makeup, it's intangibles, no doubt. But these kids were special. And they'll always be remembered in my mind. And that coaching staff was just littered with talent. And you always look back and you're like, did I really take everything from it that I should have taken from it? And there's always some low hanging fruits that you missed.
What does it work? How does it work like when it comes to player contracts? Like I've heard before, there's 10-day contracts. Like for you guys, Martha's Vineyard this summer, what's the situation like? Is it like, hey, a player signs and then he's good the entire summer?
So yeah, I mean, unless there's an injury that occurs, or there's something ongoing, or a family emergency or something along those lines. I mean, we're going to be understandable, obviously, if the player. I mean, we've had some guys that are putting up career year type numbers. So it's going to be hard to part with those guys. But at the end of the day, we're not in the business of holding a kid's hand. We've got a player retention and procurement is to is a part of the process, and we're going to do the best job we can positioning ourselves. And, I'd be remiss if I said we didn't have a wait list. Of course we do. I hope that players want to play for the organization. I hope they want to be coached by this staff, and then they want to be a part of a championship culture.
Yeah, when you say a wait list, what do you mean by that? Like players have reached out and you're like, hey, we're full right now, but maybe if an injury happens or something like that, maybe there'll be a spot for you.
100%. That's where relationships come into play. The guys that fall off and disappear on me and don't communicate are the guys that we have to assume found a home somewhere, and I'm happy for those guys. I wish nothing more for those guys. We can't, I mean, we just can't, we can't hold guys hostage to a wait list. It's unfair. And but at the end of the day, we are a desired destination. Destination. I believe we are the most desired destination in summer collegiate baseball, just simply because of where we're located, and and the league, and who our brother league is.
What you guys are in Massachusetts, right?
Yeah, we're legitimately on the island.
Oh, on the island.
Yep, you have to take a ferry to get to us. So,
I'm kind of jealous of you this summer.
I get it. I get it. It once again, it's going to be a great experience. It's going to be 40 plus games, 44 games plus playoffs. Around 20, 26, 27 plus Power Five guys. And just two unbelievable assistant coaches that I'm fired up to work with. And those guys are working their tails off at their respected Division I programs, and they're looking to make their point too about how valuable they are. And I look forward to working with those guys and just explaining and working alongside them throughout the process, and just kind of being a leader, just shining the light and saying, hey, that's not how we do things, and this is how we're going to go about our business. And like I said, there's an expectation there, and Russ has done such a good job with his organization, just continues to pour in. And he wants it to be a very, very high level summer collegiate league, and I'm just blessed to be to be in the position.
I know you mentioned
I know.
before that in past it was like sometimes it's the GM making the roster, sometimes it's a little bit of both. Is that usually how it works in a summer collegiate league? Is the GM will make the roster and then the head coach has a little bit of input?
So, I mean, I've got some mixed emotions after my experience last summer, but at the end of the day, man, like, you got to let bygones be bygones, and you got to be bigger. And it was like pulling teeth last summer, I'll say that much. It was definitely like, what I believed would be a good player, potentially, his idea of that player might have been a little bit different. And this summer, I am fully invested into the thought process that Russ has and the player that he's bringing in, because it's seasoned, it's vetted, it's profiled. We follow. We don't just we don't just lead and then and then stop following. Like, we absolutely lead throughout the spring. We ask questions. We communicate with coaching staffs throughout various Power Five programs and mid majors, and high level Division Two and high level Division Three programs. And so summer baseball, I'm torn, like, as to the miscommunication or the line in the sand where now, don't get me wrong, with the portal, there is some, it's some scary times where you don't want to send one of your guys out. And I do understand that, but we're not going to coach scared, and most coaches would laugh at that comment and say, hey, like, you can do it, but I'm not, you can dip your toes in the shark infested water, but I'm not. I feel like sometimes I used to, when I was a couple years ago, a short couple years ago, I used to say things that other coaches would say, man, like, you're saying what I've always wanted to say. And I think that's one thing about me that I'm like, Worst case scenario, I never touch, I never touch a baseball field again because I'm blacklisted. But at the end of the day, I'm going to protect the next coach. I'm going to do what's right for that player, and I'm going to put my, I'm going to be in the trenches. I'm going to do what I need to do to make sure that everything's done with integrity, and everything's done the right way.
So do you notice that a good amount that there's coaches out there, teams who don't want to send players because they're afraid of them getting poached up by other teams because of the portal?
I don't blame them.
So you're saying
I 100% don't
that
blame them.
does happen. That is happening.
100%. It has to. It has to. And at the end of the day, like I said, I'm always going to remain honest and forthcoming about conversations with players. And that's one thing that I had to do last summer was communicate with the coaching staff and just make sure they know that integrity is at its highest point, and we're gonna continue to put obviously the player in the best position, and health status is priority number one, and integrity is right there. Like that's a lateral, that's kind of that lateral comment I made earlier about like it's hand in hand. It's integrity and health. Those are two things that are, I just don't know how you can live or die without them. Like I certainly don't want coaches being misled and lied to, and I don't want players thinking the grass is always greener on the other side. So summer ball's I turn into an advisor really quick.
An advisor. I like that.
I mean, I don't know how else to perceive it.
Middle Georgia State, are they sending anybody up? Are you sending anybody up to play with you this summer, or are you guys already full?
So I can't coach my own players. We do have players
Oh,
going to
you
the
can't?
Valley. No, I can't coach my own players. No.
Maybe that was
And to be
I was
honest,
talking to somebody at JUCO. Maybe it's a different, it's not, that's a different rule if
correct.
you're at JUCO. Okay.
Yeah. We're NAI, it might be a little loose in regards to the guidelines, but that's not now. Now I've tried to wholeheartedly try to place a couple of guys that I think have have the ability for sure. And then we talk about mental acuity, and we talk about IQ and composure, and that's where I think the game kind of turns over, and that's the line in the sand. That's your next level player, is your guy that studies it and that is invested in it, and that wholeheartedly makes it. It's not about. It is as much about his results as it is about the team's success. But there is no I. It is truly about, hey, what do we need to do right here? There's just a couple of programs that I can think of off the top of my head that have done such a great job of that. And it's you got to pat those players on the back and just continue to reward and salute those coaches that coach their players up the right way and just kind of keep that mentality, in a box.
Obviously, throughout the summer, there's going to be injuries and things like that. When that does happen, are there 10-day contracts that you maybe or you give, or maybe you've heard of other leagues giving to players to come in, like, hey, let's see if this is going to be a fit, and if it's not, then no worries, and then we'll bring somebody else in. Is that how it works?
Not necessarily. The cool thing about summer ball, though, is you're going to find out real quick whether or not you can sink or you're going to swim, or you're going to swim, or you're going to sink. Just simply because it's full. I mean, we have full contracts, and if a player isn't performing or he gets his number called and he's not ready, this is your first introduction to pro ball, and so you're going to find out really quick, how hard you're willing to work, how honest you're willing to be with yourself, and how much you're going to be able to provide for this ball club, instantly. What kind of an impact player are you? And so, against big arms, 5 days a week, 6 days a week, it's like I said earlier, it's a dog eat dog. So we're not sympathetic to the player. I'm going to coach the player mentally, physically, and emotionally, but it is such a process, and they've got to be prepared when they show up and step foot out there day one.
So you're the head coach, so you're going to be right in the lineup. One of the things I'm always curious about is how are you writing the lineup, right? Are you going to be somebody who writes the lineup, player doesn't perform, we're going to just insert somebody else in there, or is it going to be consistent? Like, how are you going to go about that? I feel like that's an art in and of itself.
Yeah, no, it has to be, and once again, that dialogue is had with the player behind closed doors about the expectations, and I'll meet with all my guys one on one and spend time getting to know them. But at the end of the day, like you said, I mean, it is performance driven. I say it every day to our guys here at Middle Georgia. It is a performance driven industry. The biggest, I think, the biggest hurdle, and yet I think the one of the biggest ways that college baseball could potentially handcuff itself, but and help itself at the same time, is the one-time transfer rule, but also that fall winter break, where we can bring guys in too, those half-year guys. So it's a very unique time, and that's kind of like that "ha, I told you so" type of moment where it's, you thought that we wouldn't bring a guy in, or you thought that we wouldn't turn this roster over on its belly, and you're not performing. So in summer ball, it's a little more cutthroat where we got to kind of, we got to have those conversations. There's a short leash there for sure. I think a lot of it will be dictated based upon the level of failure, but the type of failure as well, and how they're handling the failure. When a guy needs a day off versus when a guy's got to work through something. We're working in it. As long as I know we're tirelessly working on it in early work, and we're making adjustments in game, and maybe it's handling a ball or handling a pitch in a certain location, or refining or polishing that third pitch, and being able to execute it in game in that count, at the bottom, against the bottom of the lineup, and just knowing that we can throw it. And or defensively, not being a liability. That's probably one of the biggest issues I would have, would be hit defensive liability, is I don't want my arms throwing more than they have to.
Do players have to pay to play?
They do. It's a small fee, very, very small fee.
And then do they get housing too, or how does that work?
Yeah. Everything's taken care of. Everything's taken care of. Yeah. So we're sponsored by Dovetail. Dovetail bats. And then got two types of batting gloves. We're gonna kind of throw everything we can at these players and take good care of them. Like I said, Russ does a great job. A multitude of jerseys. Our home field is unbelievably taken care of. It's a beautiful playing surface. And we're on the vineyard. It just doesn't get much better. And so, the history, the draft, the 35 draft picks in the last 10 years, it kind of speaks to its success level, and how we go about business up there, and the expectations that we have, and the way we vet our players, and the way that that Russ is excited to turn it all over to me, and but yet continue to be a huge part and build those relationships. I got to meet him for the first time at ABCA in Dallas, and what a, what a good, and what a just a very, like, he gets it. He gets it at a high level. He's seen it, he's vetted it. I think if anybody's been there, man, it's him. And so that's why I said the trust level is very high, and to be a part of building this thing with him, I just think we're in the right place. I'm in the right place. Assistant coaches are in the right place. Our roster is well-rounded, and just excited to talk about those guys and just be all about those guys.
I gotta meet this Russ guy, man. You keep hyping him up. I gotta meet him sometime.
Yeah, no, he's a character, and but at the end of the day, those Massachusetts, those island guys, man, they are built a little bit differently, and he's a tough dude, man. He's a tough dude, and I have nothing but positive things to say about what he's done for me so far, and the opportunity he's given me, and like I said, the leadership that he provides me, and he's one of the quickest responders I've ever interacted with. I mean, I shoot him a text or a call, and then I get something back within 5 minutes. And so
That's because
it's
you're
like,
Sean
it's instant.
Stevens, though.
Well, it's instant with him, and he's just, like I said, truly invested into the process, and I couldn't ask for a better opportunity for sure. I just think it's the right move for me, and I'm fired up about it.
Yeah, I'm excited for you. I got one more question for you that I think
Yeah.
would be beneficial for those listening or watching out there. In terms of how much are people paying, like on your guys' current roster right now, is there an average amount that a kid or a family is paying for them to go to school at Middle Georgia State?
Yeah, no, great question. So financially, tuition wise, if you're a border state of Georgia, you're looking at in-state tuition. So now, if you're an underclassman, freshman or sophomore, and you've got less than 60 credits, you're under 21 years old, like, you can live off on campus for 10-5, and that includes your meal plan. And the best part about us being a state school is our
And
tuition
that
is.
includes, that's actual tuition too, like academic classes?
No. So tuition is what I was about to. Yeah,
Okay.
tuition is plus tuition. So it's 10-5, and then you're talking $4,500 for the year. All right, so you're talking 15 grand, 15 grand, which is 7,500 a semester, and that's housing, meals, and tuition, if you're a border state. And then obviously at the Division II level, we've got scholarship money available, as well. And for the right player and for the right human being and for the right leader. And so with that being said, yeah, we're very competitive on that front. And I think it for any player, looking to get onto the map, be a large sample size guy and wants to make an impact on a program, I hope that they see, they see this broadcast as, an opportunity to build a relationship and or get to know me or, get to know our program and just continue to build that pipeline.
Awesome. Sean, you're the man. I appreciate so much for you coming on. Good luck the rest of the season at Middle Georgia State, and then obviously this summer too with Martha
Thank
Vineyards.
you. Thank you, man. I hope you follow, man, and I'm blessed to have you on board and excited to be able to pick up the phone and give you a shout every once in a while. And like I said, you're one of the best that do it. We appreciate all your coverage as well.
Thank you.